Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Premier Football Podcast with me, Hyrule. Joining me this week, I've got Ewan. Hey, Ewan.
Hey guys.
And Cal. Hey, Cal.
Hey, what's up? What's up?
So guys, let's kick things off this week with week three of the Singapore Premier League. It's really building up to a pretty exciting week. Tanjung Pagar, once again, retaining their
Up on
position.
the table, that's
Top
where
of the
we
table, top of the
belong.
league. But having said that, there's a lot of goals this weekend, this past weekend in the Singapore Premier League. A lot of goals, a lot of dubious plays by some of the players. Some players not really performing up to standards. But overall, I have to say, what we hoped for, it sort of have come to fruition. Like we've seen some of the teams like Hougang, Tanjong Pagar, Geylang even. And even Tampines Rovers, they've really raised their standards, you can really see them, able to go toe to toe with the likes of the two perennial big names in Lion City Sailors and Albirex Niigata. But I think that there's one major issue that really reared its head in week two and in week three that for me, it's a major worry in the sense that refereeing decisions. There's a lot of inconsistency to put it mildly, lah. I caught the game between Lion City Sailors and Tampines Rovers at Jalan Besar on Sunday, and I have to say, man, that game. I if you are a Tampines Rovers fan, you feel really hard done by. Cal, I'm sure you have something to say as well about the refereeing decisions in that game.
Yeah, man. But I mean, even first half, Tampines should have scored four or five. That it was that easy, like a walk in the park. I think at one point, even they got the ball into the box and they were passing to each other. The striker was passing back. They were taking their time to set up the shot, and I mean, it's funny how nice these guys take a very long time to get into the game. I don't understand what their train of thought is, but it just is a very slow way of building into the game. And Tampines should have scored. Boris had a few shots as well, and it just didn't work. But even in the first half, there were some strange calls by the referee, right? So the like when I think Boris was he lost the ball in the Lion City Sailors box, he went a tackle. I'm not sure who he tackled, but I remember they actually fouled him. Two players fouled him in the box, and it's a clear as day penalty. Even on commentary, they were saying penalty, but the referee just did this whole instead of just like waving, he just waved like it wasn't a foul, it wasn't anything. And he does it in a very dramatic way, and that's a bit annoying as well from that front. But I think as much.
Unnecessary even.
Yeah, unnecessary one. So if you look at the game, so I pointed it out and I've been posting it on social media as well. Just some of the things I caught within the game, right? If you talk about refereeing, so you put just up the whole refereeing standard, basically, the way the fouls were given were very inconsistent. What was once a foul is not a foul. And what wasn't a foul became a foul. That's one. The penalty incident, I felt it should have been a penalty. The other thing with Diego Lopez, he got a yellow card. And then a few minutes later, he tackled just inside of the ref, and the referee didn't give him a yellow card or a foul, but it was a definitely a yellow card foul, and
And yeah, and that second foul like caused the Tampines captain to be substituted for, I think it was a dislocated shoulder, right?
yes, exactly, and it's not, and I don't understand. You can't tell me the referee had, oh, I just booked the guy, I can't book him again. A foul's a foul. You gotta give it for what it's worth, right? And just the overall like decisions as well, and especially the goals by Tampines Rovers, right? The equalizer, which was actually deemed to be an interfering of play, made no sense at all. It made no sense at all. So I just didn't understand it from his perspective, what the referee was doing, what he wasn't doing, and what he was blowing for fouls. And even a point in time where Tampines Rovers were tackled, the ball stopped, but he waved play on. But there was no advantage of play at all for Tampines Rovers. So I don't know. I think the referee just, personally, I feel he does it as a show, or he's not sure what his decisions should be. And I think in his mind, he's just thinking too much. am I balancing it evening out? But it just spoiled the game in a sense because Lion City Sailors got that jail, that whole get off jail card from the referee. And even the penalty. Before the penalty taken from the Lion City Sailors takes the penalty hit, number 25 runs into the box.
Encroachment, right?
Yeah. Encroachment. Even on Sunday league football, the referee will pull you back and say, take it again. Right? I'm not saying it could have been safe or could have been shot, but you got to be consistent with your refereeing and the commentary as well. They were confused. They were bemused. They're going, what is this? Like, it's so, they were trying to be very neutral about it, but you could see a lot of things didn't make sense. And I think it's time for, okay, the league can't afford VAR. I understand. Do a simple old school replay. Put a TV by the pitch side. You can never do replays. The game is being broadcasted. You can just, you know, look through back, do a replay to just make sure that if that is a foul or wasn't a foul, something like that. Because I don't know, as much as the referee wants to do all this funny hands gesture, this, that, oh, like, you know, it's just, and he goes in front of the players and acts really like I'm a referee, the kind of, you know, the kind of macho in a sense. I just don't understand. And it's spoiled the game because, yes, Tamworth Rovers definitely feel hard done, but they still have to look themselves in the mirror and say, why did we not kill the game off in the first half when Lion City Sailors were not playing at all? It was purely Tampines Rovers, and all credit to number 13 from Tampines Rovers as well.
Taufik,
Taufik Suparno. Man, that guy is Superman. He was having a field day with the left, with the right back from Lion City Sailors, having a field day, you know, just cutting in and just being silky smooth just at the end. The end product wasn't there. Harold, what do you think?
I mean, I'm just afraid that, you know, all these inconsistencies in refereeing, right, it's just going to affect what could potentially be a really close and exciting Singapore Premier League season, basically, right? I mean, from the start of the season, I spotted a few refereeing errors already. I mean, basic refereeing errors. Let's not talk about VAR. I mean, we cannot afford VAR. Let's not bring in VAR, right? But basic refereeing decisions, right, are not happening. It's like, you know, if a player is getting treatment on the pitch, he should then leave the pitch, right, before the ball is started and then wait to be waved back on. But no, the referee allows the player to be on the pitch. And it's not just one occasion. I've noticed it at least a couple of other times as well. I mean, that's basic refereeing. I mean, opponent kicks a ball out, you know, to get another player treated for an injury. After that, referee gives a drop ball to the other team and asks the other team to kick the ball back. It's a bit odd. I mean, it's a straight up throw in. Yeah, it's a throw in, but you just kick the ball back. Why is there a drop ball? It just doesn't make sense. And I'm just afraid that, you know, it's just going to ruin the season for everyone, for the players, for the fans, you know, especially now that when we've got the opportunity to hopefully from tomorrow, from the 15th, of seeing more fans in the stadium, right? Because we're easing the rules here a little bit in Singapore. But you know, new fans coming to watch the games are not going to have an enjoyable experience whatsoever because of frustrations from refereeing decisions. I'm just going to ruin it for everyone. I mean, even do you catch any of the games or from the past weekend?
Yeah, so I actually dipped in to watch highlights, and at one point while watching the EPL action, they were also showing a replay of, I believe it was, it was Balestier and Tanjung Pagar. So I was watching, and that was more exciting. I thought that was like, because I caught it from, you know, Balestier being 2-1 down. Then they scored, was it like two quick goals? Yeah, and two goals. But there was driving rain, and like, you know, you said the camera work wasn't the best. So I was like thinking to myself, this is why Hyrule had a headache, but he was watching it. So I was like, yeah, okay. So I totally get it. But it's interesting because, you know, because I one of my kids was next to me, and he was saying, so it's heavy rain and we still play in heavy rain, and, you know, and it's so, why is it so blurry? You know, so, you know, the same kids that, same questions that kids always ask, right? It's like, why are they playing in the rain? Or because, you know, it's, there's no threat of lightning, so they'll play anyway, you know, as long as it's not so bad that it's not dangerous to the players, they will play. then he'll ask, oh, why is it so blurred? Because it's raining. Like, so why are they playing in the rain? You know, so that cyclical questioning, right? But but it was a good entertainment. And I was just thinking about the angle with which they were shooting. It was really up close, right? It was really, the players were in your face. So you could actually, it was almost as if you're standing in the stands watching, you know, almost, right? But, you know, minus the atmosphere, minus
to be honest, the camera was in the stands.
Yeah, no, it was in the stands. So that's why. But yeah, but gotcha. but it was entertaining. It was intriguing, right? To just see the back and forth, the flow of the match. Because I was really curious to see why, you know, Cal was saying, oh, the ballister keeper guy cannot make it. He needs a...
I feel sorry for him. I much
yeah,
as I
feel, so yeah, much so, of... you know. But yeah, it was gearing up to be a pretty exciting season in terms of just the number of goals scored and the unpredictability. The fact that the Lion City Sailors can't get, you know, up and running and they have to rely on like a you know, really bad refereeing decisions or penalty to win 1-0 when last season they were flying, right? And Albirex this season looks really good, although both teams have already lost. So it's really exciting, right, to see like a dark horse like Tanjung Pagar United top of the table, and the league season is short. You know, how many games are we looking at? Like 20 something games? Is it even? Yeah. So yeah,
I think they play each other four times. I think
four times. Okay, yeah. Okay. So yeah, so actually, you know, with the four times you play someone, right, you could lose the first time, and then the next three times you could, if the other side is really improved, learn from the mistakes or whatever else, or are really, you know, supposedly a class above the rest, then, you know, you would lose the next three. So yeah, makes for exciting setup to, you know, the rest of the season. Although we just barely started. So the ones I do feel sorry for, I guess the Young Lions, because they've lost what, two? Is it two or is it the first match that they lost?
This
first
match,
right? This
is the first match. Okay. So yeah. So yeah, I'd like to see them do well at the same time, you know, at least put up a fight. So so that we have a nice balanced sort of local league going.
I mean, yeah. It's unfortunate their first game was against Albirex.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, yeah.
I mean, they did well, you know, to hold them off to 2-0 for at least the first, you know, 60, 70 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then the quality in Albirex just came out after that.
Yeah. What was the final score, like four?
Five.
Five.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. I hope, you know, what they're coaching your kid at the Lion City Sailors Academy, right? I hope that they're coaching him well, because I don't know, man. That game I watched them play on Sunday, they were so narrow in the first half. I was very surprised they needed, you know, for them to get in at halftime to rectify that, you know, and it didn't, you know, turn it around, you know, midway to the first half, because the problem they had was so obvious. They were playing so narrow and allowing so much space for Tampines down the flanks.
Right.
I mean, but then again, you know, your kid only had like two sessions so far.
Yeah, and the last one was just rained off halfway because lightning warning. And then after the session, we find out that he's in the wrong class, as in like he was supposed to be the absolute lower level beginners class. With the rest of the kids of his age, he's like six, right? But because he's slightly taller, they thought, you know, the coaches were like, oh no, you're on the other pitch, because, you know, they thought he was older, and then they sent him. So for like 1.5 lessons, he's been training, you know, higher up the standard, that's slightly higher up than him. But I mean, for him, you know, it's about running around, like, you know, just you know, getting a feel for the ball, you know. Getting used to the fact that you play with teammates, so he's enjoying it. So that's the most important thing, and of course, they'll definitely nail down his basics. So, far away lah, far away between the Lion City Sailors first team and this.
I mean, given the injury list of the Lion City Sailors, you might move into the team sooner later.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
So I mean, if they're gonna play this way against Albirex, against the likes of Hougang and all, they're gonna struggle.
Right. You
know, he's just had a strange off day in front.
We haven't even talked about the ACL, right?
Right. Yes, yes. So actually, what is their problem? Is it like a tactical thing or is it a personnel issue?
I think all their wingbacks are injured. Their right backs are injured. I think even Gabriel Craig was play as a left back as well.
Right. So,
just the injuries as well.
Yeah, and to me, like the defense and the attack are just not connecting. You know, the midfield just serves as a buffer for the defense. They're not connecting the two together.
Right.
So that's why first half, you see a lot of them just, you know, lumping the ball up, hoping for Kim Shin-wook to just get the ball. Right.
Who's huge, by the way. It's the first time I see him on camera.
He's huge, but, you know, but he did get beaten on headers a few times as well.
Yeah.
Kel, this coming weekend, quite a number of big games. First and foremost, Albirex versus Lion City Sailors on Friday.
Yeah.
Who do you think is in a better form coming into the game?
Definitely Albirex, man. No way. Lion City Sailors, for some reason, they've taken very slow to start their games this season. And if Albirex, you've seen how Albirex, they just turn it up for 10 minutes and then they shut it down. So they can go from like gear one to gear two to gear three really quickly in the space of 15 minutes, hammering goals and stop. And also the fact that they lost the cup, right? The Singapore Cup, I mean, before the kickoff as well. So that's something that they'll be coming to, you know, get some pride back as well. And also know the fact that Albrecht has scored 11 goals so far this season. You know, I know five against the Young Lions, that aside, but none against Tanjung Pagar, I guess those of you keeping count. But still, you know, I think if the Lion City Sailors are going to start the way they get against Tampines, we could see a very strange halftime drubbing of 4-0, 3-0, that kind of level, right? Unless they can work it out. I think they're missing, the reason why they got Anu was to cover that center of the park and link the midfield and the defense as a unit. And Anu hasn't played the last game and the injury and all. So I think that's hurting them as well. But they got to sort it out fast. They have more than enough players to sort it out. But Albirex, man, they're picking up form now, I feel personally.
You and any chance of you bringing your kids along to the games this weekend?
Well, so of course the Sunday game is out again because the youngest is...
There's no Sunday games this week.
Oh, no, Sunday games. Saturday,
two on Friday, two on Saturday.
Okay, there might be a chance then on Saturday, maybe. We'll see. Because
Saturday, Saturday, the one closest to you would be at Toa Payoh Stadium, Balestier against Young Lions.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The Jurong East Stadium one is pretty tasty. It might be a top of the table clash. You know, Tanjung Pagar against Geylang.
Right.
Is it Tampines and Hougang as well, man?
Yeah, that's on Friday. Tampines, yeah.
The Northeast battle. Mm.
And then the other match would be Lion City versus Albirex, correct?
Yep, that's on Friday.
And that would be at the
Jurong East Stadium. Well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe, but I probably pick a Lion City Sailors match to go bring my youngest one to go watch first because. For some reason, it just dawned on him this week that, wait a minute, there's a Lion City Sailors football team in Singapore. I'm like, yeah, they play in the Singapore Premier League. Oh, when can we go watch them? I'm like, okay, now I'm going to bring him go watch them now. Hopefully it's, you know, when they play better and not like, you know, like a 1-0 sort of thing, right? So, yeah.
Hopefully, you know, they'll announce a relaxing of the crowd rules. I mean, I think... technically, they've announced that after the 15th, you can have 50% capacity, right?
Yeah.
But they haven't officially announced it for the Singapore Premier League yet.
Is 50% capacity for anything above 1,000? Do we get more than 1,000 for the matches? Or have we?
Yeah, I think that the matches right now are capped at 1,000.
Ah, capped at 1,000. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of stadium capacity.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Be good.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, exciting weekend. We'll bring you our thoughts of this coming weekend's games next week, and you know, fingers crossed, hopefully, touch wood, you can do, right? I'm hoping there'll be less referee controversies this weekend. We don't need it, to be honest. I mean, because really the matchups are so tasty, so exciting, right? We don't need, you know, spice from that side of things. Well, guys, shall we move on to the elephant in the room, or rather the blue elephant in the room? And talk about Chelsea. I mean, a lot's being said about Chelsea, right? Both in overseas media, in local media, even Cal has been featured in the Straits Times, being interviewed. Because you know his plans to go Stamford Bridge this year has been scuppered. Well, Cal, you're quite in touch with the local fan base, the Chelsea fans, right? How are most of them taking this this turn of events?
For them, they're taking it because, I mean, there's always different sets of fans within the group. And I think once we did like a randomly on the CFC SG Facebook page, like when do you start supporting Chelsea? And majority of them came in right around the Roman takeover period. So there are a few also that before that as well. So I think for them, it's a bit of a shock. Like, you know, we get it, okay, Roman's ties to whatever politics and all. But it's also a shock to what's happening to the club. Because a lot of them initially, we get it, the Roman thing. But a lot of them now feel like it's just the government of just going after against Chelsea and trying to destroy the club. And for them, it's like they kind of feel that if there is no Chelsea to support, they're not going to be bothered to watch football. That's what some of them mentioned. Some of them went as far as, I'll just cancel my Mio subscription, forget about it if you want to, you know, the kind of affinity. And for them, they're taking it. I mean, some of them also made plans to go to Stamford Bridge. Some of them even purchased kits online because the kits came out with the World Club Cup badge as well, right? And some of them have their transactions halted. So payment hasn't gone through, you know, all this because of uncertainty. So for them, it's frustrating as well because we're just fans far away from London. You know, whatever way we can feel connected to the club, we want to do that. In any way, so they've got their membership cards, they've got all these things. And for them, it was, we just took it as, yeah, it's going to be done in 24, 48 hours, sorted out. But now that it's been dragged on, the guys just seem to be getting more and more pissed off, more and more frustrated. And some have gone like mute, like just whatever, right? But the good side of it is the on-field performances have helped to ease that because we have like a group chat between a few of us in the CFC SG whenever we go out and play futsal and stuff like that. So there's a group chat of us and we're just going back and forth. And somehow initially everybody was angry, frustrated, but the spirits are, I mean, with the performances, they're being lifted up as well on that front. But still, man, it's still a bit of a shock and the uncertainty whether we will have a club as well. So, yeah.
Do they really understand the repercussions of what's happening? Or like, you know, like this could actually result in, you know, Chelsea possibly going under because they just can't afford to, you know, to sustain business operations. I mean, I'm taking a reference to, I'm a Liverpool fan, to when, you know, when we were in dire straits, when we were looking for a buyer to, you know, to get rid of Hicks and Gillette, lah, basically. And during that time, you know, before we found FSG, we were, if I'm not mistaken, we were about a week out from being under administration. And that's massive, right? That it's almost as if the club was going to go under, lah. But the thing I got over here in Singapore, right, not many fans really understood what it meant, right, or really knew, you know, that it could result in that. Do you get that from the Chelsea fans, especially, you know, the newer fans, you said, those who came in after, during the Abramovich era?
Yeah, I get that. A lot of them think that Abramovich has paid off the debts and Chelsea is rich and that kind of stuff, but that's the far from the reality, right? Chelsea has less than 20 million left in the bank, you know, and that's the lowest, I think, maybe the lowest in the Premier League right now, right? Abramovich has paid $1.5 billion out of his own pocket to clear the debts and things like Chelsea. And a lot of them still think that, oh, we'll be fine, someone will come in, take over. But there are a lot of other repercussions. You see, if Chelsea don't meet the financial requirements by the English Premier League, we may be docked 9 points. Okay, if except for Arsenal, if everyone else stumbles, okay, we might still qualify for Champions League, right? That's one. The other impact is if Chelsea can't pay for flights in Champions League, we might be kicked out of the tournament. So there are a lot of other implications that I think people have not realized. They just assume that, oh, it's Roman and that's it. And they assume Chelsea has money in the bank and things like that to sustain. We don't. Like, honestly, we don't. And to me, that's a frustrating part because you took Roman out of the director's role. So why is the club still being punished? Because you have to understand that when you go to Stamford Bridge, the people who work there are like you and I. They're just people who go to work, make a living, support their family. And there are 800 of them. So is the government going to stop all this crap and just let them, you know, run the business? As long as they can prove that money doesn't go to Roman, I think they should be able to do it. But most fans have not realized it. And a lot of them still live in this bubble, like, we're fine, we'll be okay, that kind of thing. Because I came from the fan base where it was the Ken Bates era, where every season you just cross your fingers, try to get...
It's a struggle, right? Yeah.
It was a struggle. It was especially that game against Liverpool. The Jesper Gronkjes goal, even though it wasn't necessarily, but it was that goal that, in a way, quote unquote, saved Chelsea. And that was the first time I cried watching Chelsea. That's how much the club meant to me at that age and that time. And before Roman came in. So when Roman came in, it was, you know, I think a lot of fans still live in this ideology that they've not dug much deeper into the issue. But to me, it's, I always come back, why is the government punishing the club and the people who work for the club as citizens of the UK or British? So to me, a lot of things don't add up and don't make sense at the end of the day. And it's scary. To me, it's scary. Can Chelsea be liquidated? Can Chelsea be, you know, it's a lot of questions up in the air. So I don't know, but I think the local fans still see it as, it's okay, we've got money, we'll be fine. You know, some even say, oh, Roman put 200 million in the bank before he left. No such thing. You got to get your facts right. You got to get your story right. You have to understand why this is so dire for a club like Chelsea and why it leaves us in a very precarious, because I think the deadline was 15th of March for, you know, bidders, but now they've extended it and we're waiting for the approval from the government to let us go ahead with the bidding. So all these things are just really, really killing the club. And fans, fans are locally just trying to wrap their head around it because they don't believe it. Some refuse to believe it. Some were brought up in a very beautiful Roman era. See, it's very different when you come from that era and when you were before that era. You know, it was a struggle every season. So it's been like that. And it's even, I think, similar for even if you talk about Blackburn as well. If you move to Blackburn and what happened when the Vankies took over for you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would dial it way back to when Jack Walker took over and really put the money into the club, right? And you know, you know that we knew, I think the Blackburn fans knew they were lucky that they had this big bankroller behind the club, willing to pay, you know, records for players like Alan Shearer, Chris Sutton, and effectively bought the championship or bought the Premier League, right, at that time. And also hated Manchester United a lot. So it was quite entertaining to see the back.
Could you
forth
say
and,
that Blackburn was the first club to have bought a Premier League title then?
Yeah, I always remind Chelsea fans of that. No, I don't tell Cal at all. You know, no point, you know, thinking about the past, because
money does not buy you titles.
Yeah, actually it doesn't.
I'm still chasing his holy grail.
Yeah. If you look to when, you know, Jack Walker took over the club, it was like 1991. It took him like, you know, 4 or 5 years to get the right people in place. Needed Kenny Dalglish, needed, like, you know, players like Shearer, Sutton, Colin Hendry. Just the right players all over the pitch. So it does have to come together, but it fell apart just as quickly, you know. And then there was this whole bouncing back and forth to relegation and then up again to the Premier League and then getting... bought over by Vankies, which I think was, for the longest time, the Jack Walker Trust, right? The family was trying to wait to sell it to the right owners, and they knew that they wouldn't be able to. They didn't want to hold on to it, and they wanted to sell it. And Vankies looked like the perfect, you know, next step up, because they were like a $1.5 billion conglomerate, and talk about like chicken worldwide, right? But I think, you know, they didn't know how to manage a football club. And I think they were had by some of the people that came along, you know, all these agents and go-betweens and, global advisors and things like that. Just funny positions that you're like, what's going on to this club, right? Any football fan would know something is weird. And then back down to the championship again, and then relegated to the you know, the third division even, and bouncing back up. Ironically now, actually the club is in a better position than with the current owners, because they haven't been seen at the club in years, like almost a decade, like 8-9 years. They're happy to let the right people run the club. And I think they've learned how to let the right people run the club. You know, for a while there, I was looking at why are they bringing in all these, you know, loan signings, people like Harvey Elliott, you know, and this season there was a ton of them, and only free transfers. And that's because they squandered all their money in the first few years trying to get the right people in, paying the wrong people to run the club. I mean, at that time, I know all of us like to have a good laugh at Sam Allardyce, but when he took over the club, there was some serious stability. You know, you could see what he was trying to do. He made, you know, some of these old players, you know, he just really, he gave them the legs back again. People like Morten Gams Pedersen, you know, Roque Santa Cruz, they were all like guys that were, you know, had potential, but kind of lost their way. But, you know, they joined a club which and a team that they could perform in, Craig Bellamy, right? So it was said that, I don't think a manager has ever been sacked when the team, I don't know, maybe they have, but when you perform and you get 13th position with what you have, that sort of a shoestring budget. And so he was sacked. And who did they hire? They hired Steve Keen, who was Sam Allardyce's, you know, assistant, who famously, you know, came to this part of the world and managed Brunei DPMM to a couple of titles. But it's you know, it's famous for saying, you know, the dumbest things, you know. But the fact that they're still doing well in terms of like their business, and they're still owners of the club, and the club is doing better is actually ironically good news. Just, you know what, 12 years after they bought the club. But you know, getting back to the issue with the Chelsea fans, and you're right. You know, as a neutral, just looking on, I'm like, why are the British parts of the club being punished, right? Why are the employees, why are the players being punished, and then indirectly the fans being punished, right? I totally understand that they want to sanction, you know, Roman Abramovich, but like you said, he's already done everything to, you know, sort of divest the responsibility of the club, and you know, I think he saw this happening. He knew that, look, if I don't just separate myself from the club, this stuff is going to happen. And, you know, credit to him. You've seen growth in Roman Abramovich. When he first came, he was like, I don't care. I'll sack this manager. I'll sack this player. You know, I'll do whatever I want because I'm the owner. I'm the billionaire. I have all the oil in the world. To now where you can actually see he just loves the club. To the point where he's willing to do what he just did, right? Where I'm putting it up for sale, any proceeds go to the victims of the whole invasion in Ukraine, which is quite unusual because, you know, I think especially with the links that he has, the apparent links that he has to the Kremlin and Putin, and he's doing this. So is he, you know, is sticking his neck out there, really, you know, because they can just easily say, why are you donating money back to, you know, Ukraine, right? You shouldn't be doing that. So yeah, you know, I'm just very curious what's happened to him and where he's gone while all this is happening, right? And it just sucks when you tell me like, oh, the club might be punished and docked 9 points and kicked out of the Champions League, when there's no real good reason for that, you know, other than the fact
that there's even a reality that the club might be seized and deceased.
Yeah, right. I mean,
it sounds very extreme, right? It sounds very
super extreme because
such a successful club, but yeah, comes to that point where they want to do that to prove a point.
I mean, because, you know, I mean, Chelsea may be Russian owned, but the club is very much part of the English Premier League. We mustn't forget that. Like you said, a lot of fans only came in and were fans and followed Chelsea when they were hyper successful, right? Shifted into that Mourinho era when Roman bought over the club. But you know, they were successful before that. They were one of the, you know, they were considered one of the classy London clubs before that. Sorry, West Ham and, you know, all the others, you know, Fulham, all those guys. But yeah, Chelsea were considered a class club to play for, right? So, and they still are. So, you know, like you said, just to, if you're protesting and you're like, you know, I don't know, it's a terrible analogy, but if you're protesting and you chop off your own arm just to make a point, it hurts you more than it helps the cause. So I don't see why the British government will want to continue to do this, because the millions of Chelsea fans around the world, you know, here in Singapore, there's so many as well. So why do that? Why hurt your own brand, right? Yeah, that just kind of doesn't make sense.
I have a feeling that in the short term, that the government will probably take control of Chelsea's revenue stream.
So Boris Johnson is the new Chelsea owner.
My question is why, though? That's my question. Right? Why is the government taking... You've got the guy out. You wanted him out. He's gone.
Yeah, but I think they want to make sure that none of that money is going to Abramovich. So it's possible that they let Chelsea earn money, but they'll keep a tight watch, you know, eagle eye on where that money is going and all that.
Right.
So it's quite ironic in the sense where, you know, you have two clubs owned by sovereign funds, right? Mm. One in Newcastle, one in Man City. Mm. And then you're going to end up with Chelsea being controlled by the UK government.
Cal's rolling his eyes.
And the thing is, though, the thing is, it's quite funny also, because even if you talk about it, if a billionaire comes in and buys Chelsea, right now we're talking about the Saudi media investment, right, who are fans of the club. And, you know, Chelsea is valued at, what, 3.2 billion to Forbes. But you have to understand that a billionaire circle is not that large. Okay? And it's obviously the money is not made in the most ethical of ways at times. So to me, I won't be surprised if Roman still will own some part of it eventually on the line, that kind of, because for him it's, you're right, even when he joined, when he took over Chelsea, initially it seemed like a hobby, like a project, right? And he kind of changed the way the Premier League was, because Premier League before was keep your manager for 10 years, it'll give you glory, success. He kind of changed that more by hiring and firing. And you know, unlike other London clubs, when we lose a manager, we don't take 10 years to recover. Instantly, had to put a jab there, no, but I know, I just
salvo it all of North London.
Yeah, because the only thing with Chelsea that's a bit of a negative is the stadium. Stadium isn't in top 20 in Europe right now, in terms of capacity, in terms of the proper infrastructure needed. It's nowhere near. So that's something that we'll see, because every day, like what Thomas Tuchel said, and I agree, every day the story changes. Today, Chelsea is going to be liquidated. Eventually, come end of the season, players are going to be all next. And next day, the Saudi media group is going to take over. Mm. And today, Azpilicueta is not going to Barcelona. He's triggered an extension in his contract. So to me, until, and I know media has to sell to create hype. I get it. Until I see it in life, in living color, in the flesh, then I'll believe it. Till then, I just, you know, I just smile and take it day by day, because Chelsea fans, you know, you've been through worse, and we've seen what happened as well. So to me, it's worrying, but not overly stressed out yet. And I think that's the mantra most local fans are taking as well.
Speaking of the story changing from day to day, there was a bit of a story about a Chelsea fan in the local papers today, Singapore local papers, not wanting to go to the FA Cup, or, you know, not being able to make plans to go to the FA Cup semi-final or final. Do you know anything about that, Cal?
Yeah, this poor bugger, he had tickets in the English FA, the Wembley Stadium, you know, hoping to get tickets to go with his wife to watch, I guess, you know, hopefully, you know, FA Cup semi-final or final, but now that's so uncertain. You know, if those of you who are married, long-term partners, you know, happy wife, happy life, happy spouse, happy home, whatever you want to call it. It's being changed to New York. So we might, you know, end up going to watch New York Red Bulls of Chelsea. But it was nice. It's a good article by Straight Time, just trying to understand what it means to the club. Because to me, I believe also that a lot of people don't know football or fair weather friends. They might assume that Chelsea is, you know how we are, right? Human nature, we'll just pretend something for 5 minutes and pretend to be experts in it. Because everybody's an expert in Chelsea Football Club overnight and sanctions and all this. So for me, it's, you know, to me, my one other concern is in terms of developing the Chelsea fan base locally, you know, would that put off kids from supporting Chelsea or millennials and all their, you know, protest stuff. So to me, that's another concerning factor as well. Just take Chelsea locally. And the reason I say that, because if you don't have a strong local base, it doesn't make sense for the club to come here as well. You know, and it kind of hurts the fans who want to see the club come here. So that's where it's looking forward as well. I think in the short term, it'll be painful. Have to bear with it. It'll be painful. But in the long term, it should be okay for Chelsea. I'm not that pessimistic to see that we won't get titles for 10 years. We will get something, but we have to just wait it out. But it is what it is. Yeah, it could be worse. Right? I could have been supporting Spurs.
Oh. Always have to put that leg in.
That's okay. They got, I got Harry Kane, yeah? You gotta feel, you got, you know, I feel for, I don't believe I'm saying this, but I kind of feel putting for Spurs as well. For Conte. Like we're just saying right before we started, they're the win-lose kind of team. And even though they had more shots on target.
Yeah, and it's not that they play worse. I was watching the game, they did not play worse.
More shots, more possession.
It was just really just the one guy that Ronaldo showed. That was it, you know. And we, you know, even Conte said after the post in a post-match interview, you know, if we face the Manchester United without Ronaldo, the score might not quite be the same, you know. So the closest he came closest anyone's going to say that they just had one guy and the one guy made all the difference. And it was,
was just one coming only, bro. One coming killed the game for them. One came and killed it.
That short trip back to Portugal did wonders for him.
Yeah, man. Wonders. Which makes me like so curious, you know, if he had faced Man City. I mean, what would the result have been? I don't know. I have a feeling they would have still been outplayed, but just the star factor, right? The fact that he can just turn things around in one kick of the ball.
Not against City.
Not against City. La. Yeah.
I mean, I would put him down for he'd be good for a goal at least, right? So the question is, when does the goal come? You know, I mean, just watching Spurs, the first goal that they conceded, Spurs were like attacking with all the, and I think that was their only shot on target in the first like 25 minutes at least, or first half an hour, and they scored. Of course, it was a fantastic screamer, right, from outside the penalty box. And Spurs had the better of the midfield play for sure. I mean, although some people have said that Pogba played well in patches, I just thought the Man U midfield was rubbish. I was looking at all these Spurs guys and going like, wow, who's this fella and that fella? And this Kulishevsky guy is pretty good, actually. Now I know why, you know, what's his name is on the bench, French winger. But yeah, I'm like, it's just, I don't know, not having the rub of the green or just, I don't know, because their performance wasn't ultimately that bad at all. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, Hatta, I know you're not here something else today, but dude, your Arsenal is on a roll.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
The question is, can they keep up that role against Liverpool?
The mighty Liverpool.
The mighty Liverpool.
You know, and will Liverpool? I hope Liverpool isn't too distracted. I think they'll be up for that game. You know,
if City actually loses to Palace.
Yeah.
Because Palace has been a banana skin for City, right? That's coming up to 4 a.m. And then on Thursday, 4 in the morning, you've got Arsenal-Liverpool.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And then to me, what I find to be a decisive game, Everton against Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Everton, Newcastle.
Everton's in free fall, man.
Yeah, very bad.
Yeah, so I was watching the Everton fan channel, and then they kind of have the camera in the stands after the game. And they're just saying you're not fit to, I mean, in a much more colourful way. You're not to wear the kit, you know, they're just frustrated, man, because your nearest rivals are, if not, I would say one of the best teams in the world right now, if not the best, you know. And then just cross down, you've tried everything. You've tried Ancelotti, you tried Benitez, you tried bringing in midfielders. You've got all of these things. And imagine how frustrating it must be as well. Where their transfer window was just a transfer window for the sake of having a transfer window.
Mm.
And you bring in someone like Lampard that it's showing, right? He's not
wish
him all the best, but it's just not, something's not clicking there. And then it got Newcastle. Newcastle played Chelsea and they lost, but truthfully, they were in fighting game the whole time. It is one magic of Jorginho and they're controlled by Kai Havertz.
Yeah.
Killed it off. But Newcastle were there. Newcastle were fighting. So
And they might actually have gone ahead if the referee had actually decided that Chalobah had, you know, committed a foul, you know, with a fistful of jersey he had, of course.
I think he's in the same cousin as a Singapore referee, same family. No, yeah, but Hyrule,
Liverpool, the same school of referee now.
Same school wrestling. Bukit Ho Swee referee school.
Yeah.
My father's school.
They won't burn down already, lah.
That's what my dad told me. No, but how? Arsenal, Liverpool.
Yeah, man. What do you think, Hyrule? I mean, it's at Emirates, right? It's at Emirates, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Emirates, yeah. I mean, we've been there already this season. We won 2-0. That was in the FA Cup. No, the League Cup semis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of people were not expecting us to come out of that one 2-0, actually. I'm quietly confident the front line, I have to say, isn't clicking, unfortunately, for Liverpool, right? Salah's only scoring penalties lately. Mane is still adjusting to his center role amongst the front three. But I have a sneaky feeling he may play Firmino and Diego Jota for this game. And those two have history with Arsenal. They've got a very good record against Arsenal. Yeah, so I'm quite confident with this game. I'm hoping it'll be a 2-0 game. But Arsenal's attack, if they've got all their youngsters fit, right, is quite, will be a challenge, especially if they try and get by Liverpool's high line. You know, I won't be surprised if it's we win by the odd goal, but with no clean sheets.
Yeah.
I think the experience will come. That's why I feel in Liverpool, instead of the experience, even if you go down, goal down or goal up, the experience, the likes of Henderson, Fabinho, Van Dijk, these players are much more.
It shows he brought off Henderson, he brought off Thiago. I mean, he didn't play Thiago for the full game against Brighton.
Brighton, yeah.
Right? So, I think he's saving them a bit for the Arsenal game. I'm expecting a midfield of Thiago, Henderson and Fabinho.
Yeah.
And front three, possibly Firmino, Jota and Salah. If not, it'll be Mane, Firmino and Salah.
I think the wildcard will be Diaz for you guys and
Smith-Rowe.
Because you know, Diaz has taken to the Premier League like a fish in water, man. Like, I don't know whether the style suits him perfect. Or, you know, same with Jota as well. Because when Jota first signed, everyone was skeptical. He had Premier League experience, but can he fit into Jurgen Klopp's system? And he fits like a kind of perfect. Yeah.
I remember thinking when they signed him, it was like, why him? Why not, you know?
Everyone is expecting Traoré, right?
Anyone else in Wolves was like a you know, brighter star, bigger potential. But they signed this Jota guy. Why, right? And then we saw. But I think you're right, Hyrule. I think that the main battle, the key battle, will come with Liverpool's attack versus Arsenal's defense. And I don't just mean the back line, but collectively, you know, the midfield as well. Who gets the upper hand, I think. And basically the chess games have begun, right? So how they line up, they put an experienced midfield. I think that does make sense. You know, and you're right, Cal, that the ace up the sleeve will be Luis Diaz. So I expect him to come maybe later on the second half, unless his form is so good that, you know, Klopp cannot just keep him on the bench and then he has to start. But Firmino has seen...
I think he started quite a number of games. I think he's due some time on the bench just to you know, give him a breather.
Also makes sense. And he got flawed in that by the Brighton keeper, which was, what was that? That was like, we saw that and I was watching the kids and I'm like, yeah, that's how you don't play football. It's football, that's, not karate. Guys.
That's how you clothesline someone with your leg.
Karate.
You just did like a JR. I'm like, oh my God. My God is dead. My God.
WWE commentary. But yeah, you know, it's curious because you know, sometimes the kids ask me the funniest questions and then I end up playing like, you know, I'm like, okay, so if he didn't score the goal, they would have given a penalty and they would have sent him off. So why is he not being sent off just because he scored the goal, right? Why is the keeper not being sent off just because Luis Diaz nodded the goal in? So that's crazy, right? I mean, even with VAR and everything, I guess I sort of buy it if they say it wasn't malicious, but he brought him down. He brought him down. I mean, leg across the chest, there's no way he could have been trying for the ball, but of course, the effect is, you know, there's no way Luis Diaz.
Yeah, I think they asked Dermot Gallagher about this. And what Dermot Gallagher said was, because the VAR ref deemed that it was only a yellow card foul, that's the end of that. So
he didn't even get a yellow card, did he?
He did. Oh, he get a yellow card.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So because the on-field ref, Mike Dean, already
got an angle,
gave him a yellow card already.
Right, and the
VAR. Yeah, like,
okay,
I think it's a yellow card as well. So,
previous error, right? Yeah. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, and because of that, right? There's no recourse to upgrade it to a red card, lah.
Yeah.
So, well, that's refereeing, red tape for you.
quick one. Newcastle, Everton.
Ooh.
Let's go with one game this week. This is the really, it's a 6-pointer, the ever was one.
Yeah.
This will be it.
Go ahead, Ivan.
I think you're gonna say you'd like Everton to win, but I think Newcastle, having lost over the weekend, I think they're hungry to show that, you know, their form has not been a fluke. And they will be all over Everton again with the form that they have and the players that they have and the desire. I think they've realized that they really want to stay in the Premier League. And I think Everton are missing that right now. So I think, you know, Newcastle to win by, you know, two goals, whether 2-0, 3-1, 4-2. But two clear goals from.
Just to give you a bit of things, Everton have not won in their last three games against Newcastle. They've drawn, lost one.
Right.
They lost 2-0 last season.
I think Newcastle will be quite heartened by the fact that, you know, of how they lost to Chelsea, very narrowly against Chelsea, right? How they performed against Chelsea.
Yeah.
And Everton just can't seem to get a win, you know. I mean, even you're right, I mean, I'd rather see Everton stay in the Premier League than Newcastle, right? It'll be nice to have new money get relegated, right? But... but I just can't see it happening.
New money, those were the days.
Can't see it happening, man. See it happening.
Yeah, you're right.
So you're going with what? Everton to win?
Newcastle to win by the odd goal.
Yeah. For those of you who are pantang, you know, when they play on Thursday, Everton only average 1 point per game. So... you know, but they've not lost in any Thursday games.
A draw is not good for Everton, man.
No, man. But it's hard. Newcastle seem to be on a run.
Although, to be honest, no, a draw might be better for Everton than Newcastle, actually.
Because they have games in hand. So, right? Yeah.
But, you know, knowing Lampard, that's not what he wants,
Yeah.
Lampard's not the kind of manager to, you know, have your team just batten down the hatches and, you know, park the bus.
But he has to. He has to do that.
Yeah.
If you're going to play attacking football, you're going to struggle.
Yeah. Really. He's got to summon the spirit of his former manager, Jose Mourinho. Score that odd goal, park the bus. and then hope for the 3 points. Yes.
I don't think it's in it, man. I don't think it's in it.
No, I don't think he can do it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's a lot of loose hanging threads of plot points. enough for us to talk about this week, and definitely a lot of talking points for next week. Especially, you know, for you know the Chelsea story is going to be, it's going to be an ongoing saga for this season. Chelsea play Lille.
But that's already been paid.
Yeah,
the game has already been transport also settled, yeah. So we're fine. It doesn't kill our budget.
Yeah, and even if it hasn't been paid, it's just a you know a short trip on down the on the Eurostar lah. So it's not that expensive.
Yeah, Eurostar way back.
Yeah, so it's not that bad lah. I guess if Chelsea goes through, you're gonna hope to get drawn with an English team lah. It won't be so expensive.
I'll take City, man, any day. I don't want Liverpool. Give me City.
How about Man U?
You think they'll beat Atletico Madrid?
Good question.
Yeah.
Good question.
You never know. There's that one guy there who likes to, you know, show what he can do.
Especially against a Madrid team, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, once again, like I said, more plot points.
Cliffhangers.
Cliffhangers, indeed. Anyway, on that note, dangling off a cliff, that's all from me signing off for this week. Thanks, guys, for joining me. I'll speak to you guys again next week. Bye.
Tanjung Pagar. Sing with me. Sing it with your chest. Take care, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye.